Please be seated, won't you? Well, good morning, brave and faithful souls. So. How many of you make a New Year's resolution or think about doing something different or make promises? And if you've ever done this, if you don't have to raise your hand, last night I suggested this, and there's a few people kind of like, I think they thought I might make an example of them. I'm not going to. But I bet you've thought about it before, right? Or how many of you have ever said, I am so glad 2013 is over. I'm looking forward to a whole new year. This year is going to be better. Have you ever said that? Or have you ever said, I can't wait till October's over because, boy, November is going to be a better month. Or whatever we might say. I think sometimes when we hear that, we don't always realize that we're sort of portraying a hope. So whatever's gone on in the last few months or years or whatever, there's always a hope that things will get better or things will return to something. I think it's not totally unusual to sometimes hear someone say, last year was the best year of my life, but more often than not, it's the other, isn't it? There's a common saying among Jewish people that would have also existed in the old days, where they would say at their annual New Year's celebration a toast, and they would raise their glass of wine, and they would say, next year, Jerusalem. Did you know what that is? So it happens usually around the Passover, and it's a hope for a return to something. And maybe we don't always realize that, but I think we're influenced in lots of ways in our own thinking by ancient culture. A hope for a new year, a hope for a return, a hope for restoration, whatever that might be. And that particular toast, next year Jerusalem, is a toast that calls to a restored temple or a restored relationship with God. In the prophet Jeremiah, in the reading that we have for today, we hear a glimpse of that same kind of hope. There is a sense that Jeremiah is returning after the temple had been destroyed, some 800 years before the birth of Christ, or 700 years, depending on how you measure history. But he's coming and he's hoping to restore the temple, to offer restoration to the people, because for the people of Jeremiah's age, Jerusalem was the center of the world. And for the temple to be destroyed, for the lame, for whatever that might be, for any of that to be in destruction is to mean their hope, their center point of the world, was lost. And in that particular belief, the belief was that if things weren't going right, you haven't done things right with God. You know, you haven't fulfilled the covenant. You haven't been faithful or righteous in the words of the Old Testament. And so the hope for each new year, each new beginning, was for life to be restored. Isn't life a journey? Have you ever thought of that? Do you remember being asked as a child, what do you want to be when you grow up? Are any of you doing exactly what you wanted to be? Have you become that? Anybody? Maybe not. But what got in the way? Life throws you curveballs, to use a sports analogy. Things happen that you don't expect. You might have been given great opportunity, or you might have had huge change come into your life. You may have thought one thing was going to happen, and then you get caught up in the sweep of an economic change, and you suddenly find yourself going a different direction. Opportunities might have come, or whatever might happen. I think sometimes we lose touch with the importance of the gospel, and the gospel telling us that Jesus, or God, is with us in these journeys and might understand. I think it's always kind of funny when we have the pageant at Christmas Eve, we sort of make it beautiful and clean. You know what I mean? All of the costumes are well-pressed. The kids look amazing when they're up there. And that's exactly how it should be. It's a Norman Rockwell moment, and it's important to us. Right, Dick? Dick was my priest as a child. I was Joseph once, right? And I was also not allowed to be an angel once. So we can tell you why. But it's beautiful. But there's other parts of the story that really wouldn't work so well in that setting. And one of them is why Jesus and his family, Mary and Joseph, venture to Egypt. Why suddenly they take this newborn child and wander across desert. This is long before jet airplanes and trains and buses and comfortable cars and highways. This is traveling by donkey or by camel, walking in dangerous roads, in difficult conditions, without a car seat. So why did they journey? But because the leader of the time, Herod, was jealous. And these very wealthy wise men from the east had shown up and had been walking through the community and drawing attention. You need to remember, it wasn't just that three people came. They would have brought caravans with them. These were not poor people coming to the town. These would have been extremely wealthy folks coming from a faraway land. And they were saying, a new king is being born. And Herod is suspicious and terrified. So he sends an order out to protect himself and says, all firstborn males born in this region shall be slaughtered, killed. I think that is so far from our understanding in the culture that we live in. We can't even fathom one of our leaders making a direction like that. Can you imagine our mayor or our governor or anyone declaring an order quite like that? And so they were terrified. And to protect their child, just as we would protect our child from any danger, just as we would do whatever we could to keep ourselves safe, they journey to a faraway land and go to a foreign country. And when things change, they come back. Still terrified because the next leader is not much better. And so they find themselves in the Nazarene region, which again is not the best neighborhood. I'm not talking about today, but in Jesus' time, it was a place where criminals were thought to come out of. And this is where they land to raise this most precious gift, their child, and to raise the one that is proclaimed to be the Son of God. And sometimes I think what we lose is that Jesus shows us all kinds of struggle in his life. Jesus shows us the struggles of surviving, of doing what it takes, of being raised in tough situations. And sometimes I think that we lose that God can empathize with us in the difficulties of our own journey. But the bigger point of the story is that even in that difficulty, imagine that context, there is hope. Next year, Jerusalem. Next year is going to be better. God's going to restore the temple. Jesus is going to come and bring a new kingdom, one of love. And death will be trampled down forever. I think it's easy to really miss that. You know, that kind of hope lets us do a food pantry. That kind of hope lets us do ministry with the homeless. That kind of hope allows us to engage prisoners and the downtrodden. That kind of hope allows us to pray with those who were sick and to sustain them in their time of difficulty. That kind of hope encourages us in the greatest times of our life and in the toughest times. That kind of hope keeps us going. This week, as you go about your life, maybe you've made some New Year's resolutions, or maybe you've made some promises, or maybe this year needs to be a better year for you. But I want you to consider protecting the gift of faith and hope in your life. Protecting it as the precious gift that Mary and Joseph saw Jesus as being. And knowing that no matter what life throws at you, no matter what struggles that you're going through, even if you don't feel it, even if you can't see it, God is there. God is sustaining you. God is holding you up. And it might be a long time before you see it. But protect that faith because it's what gives us hope. Jeremiah called his people to be righteous. This story that we have from the gospel today tells us of the journey of the one that we follow in our faith. And we carry that forward to be hope in the world. Jesus restored creation. Jesus restores our relationship with God. So be hopeful and have faith. Amen.